We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Monday Fantasy Football Podcast. We are summing up Week 7, a disastrous Week 7 for both Chris and I. Not in personal terms. Chris had a wonderful weekend. Family went away, so he had a party at weekend at Bernie's.
No. First of all, weekend at Bernie's is not a fun party. If you
No, it's not, but it was an attempt at one.
Secondly, my family's going away now. They were here this weekend.
Okay, they just left today. I gotcha. Earlier today.
I drove them out with my reaction to Week 7.
Ah, yeah. Well, okay, let's talk about why it was such a disaster. It's pretty obvious. I mean, OBJ, first of all, out for the season, torn ACL. Didn't have the decency to have a good game before he got hurt.
No.
You know, first offensive play of the game. Tried to make a tackle on an interception. That's about the worst possible way.
That's really what it is that he wasn't even making a catch. He was just so gratuitous and stupid. Just pulling AJ Green, stay out of the way. So that was really, really bad. And then, that Ronald Jones basically looking like the turning the corner to be a reliable every week back and then drops a pass. Fournette comes in, plays great. That was horrible. Deebo Samuel, who I waited 4 or 5 weeks for, hurts his hamstring during a blowout. That was horrible. I picked up Jeff Wilson, genius that I am, but I didn't start him because I didn't know that McKinnon was getting a day of rest because nobody knew that. And I actually did start McKinnon in another league, started Latavius Murray over Jeff Wilson. Then I was like, well, you know, I didn't start him, but at least like going forward, this could be really valuable. Hurts himself out probably a few weeks at least. So that was worthless. I had Denver plus 9.5 as my best bet. They're down 10-6. They're sacking Mahomes. They're moving the ball. And I'm going against the Chiefs defense in a high stakes league. Pick six. Okay, fine. Denver gets the ball, drives down, kicks a field goal, 17-9, kickoff, return touchdown. That's it. That's it for my Melvin Gordon share. I started Gordon over James Robinson foolishly. Then Gordon's game flow got destroyed. Then he decided to do a flea flicker flip over Drew Lock's head. That just made it worse. I could go on and on. I mean, there are so many things that happened, and it was just like one after another after another, and I'm watching in disbelief just thinking, you know, what is my purpose on planet Earth? Like, why am I watching this? What is the point of doing this? And by the end, I was in a pretty sour mood, to the point where I just kind of checked out, talked to Heather for a bit, went to sleep. And when I woke up this morning to take the dog out, at first I was like, yeah, I'm a little tired, but I feel all right. And then it all came like roaring back, like a bad night of drinking where you started to curse out somebody, and there was some, you hit on the wrong person. It was in my single days. And it was a total disaster. And that's what it felt like. It came rushing back, all the misery and horrors of the night before.
Oh yeah. And I'll tell you what, similar experiences. So my primetime team, really good team, was heretofore a really good team. And now it's in shambles. Yeah. Mixon hurt. Myles Gaskin on bye. Okay. Normally, hey, great. I made a great pickup. I'll have him as a bye week fill-in. So it shouldn't hurt that much. No, I needed him. This was my bye week fill-in. I needed him this week. Josh Jacobs, terrible matchup. Rojo drops a pass. Then Fournette takes over. OBJ, CeeDee Lamb, one catch. Oh. And then DK Metcalf in the nightcap. I'm like, at least I'll have Russell and DK Metcalf. I'll get 130 and get out of here. You know, I'll be all right. No. I got two catches. I had a touchdown called off. You know, it was just ludicrous. It's just everything went wrong. You know, Mark Andrews was on bye. So, okay, at least I had Hockenson. That was my one good player. You know,
Russell Wilson. I picked Derek Bell for Mark Andrews in two leagues. He got me zero. And then I'll one-up you on Metcalf, who I needed also. Not only did he do nothing and the TD got called back, the one great play he made was on Buda Baker, who had an easy pick six, but Buda Baker was jogging because he didn't think some, you know, as you said, Usain Bolt type guy is going to run out of nowhere and get him. And that was a 6 points desperately needed in the stake league. I was starting Buda Baker in an IDP league. So not only did DK Metcalf not produce for my NFFC team where I desperately needed him to, he actually interfered with another league. He personally intervened and cost me 6 points in another league while doing nothing for me in the league that I used him.
And he's like, if they're not going to throw it to me, nobody's scoring. Screw that.
No. Yeah.
I have team player. I've got a different league, a super flex league with both Kyler Murray and Wilson, which I'm not complaining because they've been very good to me. But that sequence of Wilson getting picked off, and then Arizona not being able to convert into points at the other end where Murray was actually losing yards. It's like, ridiculous.
Yeah, you're probably all right with those two guys in a super flex. It's almost like you'd have to have botched the rest of your team so entirely. Do you know that, like, Murray and Wilson, Wilson's played, I think, six games. Murray's played seven. They're both, like, top three all-time in QB scoring over those spans.
I know, it's ludicrous.
All-time.
It's ludicrous.
Like, in the history of football. And I think, I don't know if it was Scott Barrett, somebody posted this on Twitter. I can't remember who. I'd like to give him credit. Maybe it's Tristan Cockcroft. It was somebody who, like, compiles stats like that. And he said something like the number of quarterbacks that have had, you know, whatever, 40 or 50, whatever the number is, whatever the threshold is, point weeks from like 1989 to 2009 is like the same amount as they've had so far this year or something crazy.
Wow. That's amazing. It is amazing. So there's a lot of other stuff going on. We mentioned that. Let's just talk Cowboys for a second. They're a disaster. This was this beautiful offense. Yeah, it had some problems, but Dak helped it overcome. And now it's completely off the rails. It went from a top five, top three offense, one of the best. Dak had the hottest start of all time, to now it's ruined everybody. The Amari Cooper might not be ruined. Zeke isn't ruined, but he's definitely lessened. But CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup, you can't use them. I don't know what I'm going to do going forward, especially now that I lost OBJ. I think I still have to just cross my fingers and hope.
Yeah, you're going to use – I would use CeeDee Lamb probably. Depends. But it's all very downgraded. And, Dalton's out probably for a week or two also. So, I forget the name of the guy who took over, like a rookie seventh rounder.
But Ben DiNucci.
Who knows? Romo was undrafted, but the offensive line, we were talking about this on the XM show, but people say, running backs don't matter, and you get into all that BS about, it's just stupid. But I could argue that quarterbacks don't matter, and that seems ridiculous. You're like, quarterbacks, that's all that matters. That's the most important position. But if you look at it, like, the quarterback is unless it's a transcendent quarterback, which there's only a handful, he's as good as his offensive line. Look at Baker Mayfield, how well he played against the Bengals. Baker Mayfield, in my opinion, is not a very good quarterback. But when he had time to throw and he had a cornerback to pick on, or maybe more than one, he was just able to go 22 for 23 after his cold start, and the one miss was a spike, and five touchdowns to a bunch of scrub receivers, you know, no Hooper, no Beckham, and he lit it up. And I just think, like, when you have any, you know, reasonably competent NFL quarterback, and Mayfield's probably the floor of that, and he's got great protection, he's going to do well. And so the converse is also true, that if you have any non-transcendent quarterback, and maybe Dak is even better than we realize, and they're behind a terrible offensive line, they're not going to do anything, and it doesn't really matter. So in that sense, the quarterback doesn't really matter, except at the extremes. The extremely great quarterback who's going to do it no matter what, the extremely bad quarterback who can't do it no matter what, and then the extreme offensive lines where the offensive line is so good or so bad. But like, pretty much the quarterback is just dependent, so dependent on having time to throw. And what do the best defenses do? They get to the quarterback. What they basically do is they create the condition that makes it impossible for the quarterback to do what he's practiced. And on the show, I was talking about tennis. And you're more of a tennis player than me, Jeff, but I played a little tennis. Mm-hmm. And if you ever take a tennis lesson, they hit it right to you and you step into it and you know, you're hitting line drives perfectly over the net. But then if you get in a real match and someone's, you know, lobs it deep and you're like at your backhand and the ball's bouncing over your head, it's not easy to hit a good stroke. And so, you know, that's the difference between a good tennis player. Right? Anybody can swing at an easy ball, but, you know, what do you do when it's not set up for you? And I feel like the best defenses put quarterbacks in a position where they're swinging at a really difficult ball all the time, and most of them can't do it. But you put any quarterback in an easy situation, they're going to look really good. And so these offensive lines in Dallas, in Cincinnati, Giants, Jets, there's no fixing the QB problem until that's fixed.
I think you're probably right about that. There's when you don't have a good pass rush, it really exposes your DBs a lot too. Seattle didn't touch Kyler Murray in one single dropback. Cincinnati couldn't get to Mayfield. The last 2 weeks for the Bengals, Phillip Rivers and Baker Mayfield have torn them apart, like picked them to shreds. That's your sign right there.
Right. That's right.
So Ryan Tannehill, have yourself a day next week.
Yeah. Oh, he's going to go crazy. Or Henry may just bludgeon them instead, but either way, it's going to be a good choice for them. But it's true, when Rivers and Mayfield look like Pro Bowlers, it's probably not Rivers and Mayfield. It's probably the defense. And it's so obvious what I'm saying, but people think, oh, this quarterback is so great. Oh, he sucks this year. He's great this year. Matt Ryan sucks last year. He's good again. He's bad again. Like, dude, just these quarter. I mean, I'm not saying all quarterbacks are exactly the same, but pretty much a competent NFL quarterback will carve you up. Look at Kirk Cousins when he has time to throw. Will carve your ass up if he's got time to throw. And, you know, that's the whole game. And why do teams invest so much in left tackles and edge rushers? Why are those routinely after the quarterback, the highest paid and highest picked players? Because right. Those guys create the quarterback or destroy the quarterback. That's their jobs.
It is. And there's a thread going around Twitter talking about Aaron Donald and whether he can handle the run and what the splits are. It's like, his job is to create havoc. That's what he does. They take him out sometimes because, like, you know, it's a rotation like everybody else. He could play the run, but that's not what they want him to do. That's not what he is. Not a run stuffing defensive tackle. He is a guy that's supposed to create havoc and just blow things up.
Yeah. If you get the rush from the middle, it's really tough because most quarterbacks, pocket passers, step forward, right? I mean, you see Brady or Breeze or all the great pocket passers. The rush comes from the edge, and you step up in the pocket. They create, that's what the pocket is. It's like a boundary to protect the quarterback. And you step up and step into the throw. And again, it's like hitting a tennis ball. If you have it so you can step in and use your proper motion, not back foot bailing out, you know, but really step through the throw, you're probably going to be accurate. You've done it a million times. But if you get the push from the middle, good luck. There is nowhere to go. You step in, you get crushed. So, like, you know, if you're Pat Mahomes or Russell Wilson, you can escape maybe. But that's why that push from up the middle is so devastating.
Yeah. Speaking of that, you know, did you notice, like, all of a sudden in overtime, Wilson had no time to throw? You know, right. All of a sudden, Arizona figured out, oh, we know how we can blitz them and confuse them on our blitzes, where they couldn't do that all game prior to that.
It was weird. The game, it was Seattle, every game with the Seahawks is so weird, but this is the weirdest game I've ever seen. One of the weirdest games of all time. Like, overtime, when there were so many, like, shifts in overtime. Usually, overtime is like one drive and it's over, or there's one drive and then a field goal and it's over, or there's a couple drives and the teams both suck and it's a tie or something. It's never like one team's almost certainly going to win and then all of a sudden the tables turn and then it was like the most bizarre back and forth. The Cardinals had 4 minutes left. They were down 10 and they're running the ball.
Yeah.
And they're, I'm like, what are you doing? Like, I was like talking to the screen this morning because I watched it on the rewind. I was like, what are you doing? Like, go. What are you even thinking? I did not understand it. And they got that roughing the passer or something. They kicked the field goal and they got that. I didn't even see if it was legit or not, but that got them. They were going to kick the field goal and that would have.
They did kick the field goal. It was good. And they took points off the board. That was a huge play.
So this roughing the passer thing puts me in line for the cover again. They get the touchdown. Then Seattle gets the ball on third and two. They hand it to Carlos Hyde. Then they punt, right? And they give Arizona the ball back rather than just trying to get Russell Wilson put in his hands and let him get a first down. And then it's just the whole thing was so crazy that overtime they ice their own kicker who makes it. He misses it. Seattle's got the Metcalf touchdown. That's called back. Russ throws a ridiculous interception. They get back and they score again. And even the last play in overtime before the field goal, they lost like 5 or 6 yards. Do you remember that? They tried to run it and they lost a bunch of yards.
Yep. Wild game. You know, Seattle and Arizona in particular against each other play weird games. Remember there's like that low scoring overtime game. It was like 12-9 or 9-6 or something like that. It was so bad. It was art. It was one of those.
Vaguely remember it. I think I've deleted it from my. And Pete Carroll is such a good and bad coach at the same time. Yep. That's why he's in all these weird games. Like, he's not a coward. He's willing to take chances. They finally let Russ cook thing is obviously good. And, you know, some of the play design and the offense is good. But then, like, the clock stuff he's always wrong about. He's always punting, like, foolishly.
Yeah.
He's such a weird coach. Like, it's like he's like, in a dimension that's, like, it's not like he's in the Belichick, Harbaugh, Andy Reid level. But he's, like, in his own dimension where he's good, but he does strange stuff. And that's why the games are weird in part, because they don't close him out when they should close him out. I mean, Seahawks should have won that game, and they just couldn't close it out.
Right. I think they – and I know, like, the interception he threw in the end zone was targeted to Metcalf, but it was kind of like an attempt at a throwaway, and he just missed it. But they didn't. They just gave up on throwing to Metcalf because of Patrick Peterson. It was almost like they gave him too much credit. I know everything was working with Lockett so much early on.
I think that was it.
But I think in the second half, they went away from what works. And, yeah.
They went into a shell a little bit. They weren't as aggressive. They weren't, you know, once the Cardinals were down, you know, I think when you're up 10 and you have offenses like that and defenses like that also, go up 17. I mean, you don't want to use clock and punt. I mean,
it's the Belichick way.
Yeah. Just best defense is a good offense. Just keep the ball, keep scoring, and don't take it for granted. And that is true. And I agree with you. I mean, I think Metcalf's unstoppable. Russ throws those rainbow bombs and who's going to interfere with him. But yeah, early in the game was just Lockett was going so insane. It was open every play.
Yeah. It's like Game of Thrones. When you have a guy down, finish him. Don't do anything for style points. Don't do anything.
Oh, just, yeah. Like, the mountain. Spoiler alert.
Yes. It's not too soon anymore, is it?
No, it's not.
Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari America, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
Yeah. Speaking of the Seahawks, Chris Carson has a midfoot sprain. Just MRI just came back. Seems like he'll miss some time. Although we thought he'd miss time after that Cowboys hit on him, too. You know, I guess that should have been our sign, though, too. That Cowboys game was as close as it was. And the Cowboys are just awful. You know, maybe that Seattle, you know, even though they're undefeated, they're not that great anyhow. Their offense
is. How about
is.
The Patriots? How about the Patriots almost beat them? Should have beat them.
Yep.
At the 1 foot line, the Patriots suck.
Yeah.
I mean, that, you know, everyone's like, I thought, oh, wow, Cam's going to be a monster this year. Look how good he looks. But maybe that wasn't the correct takeaway. Maybe the correct takeaway was anybody can go crazy against the Seahawks.
Yeah, I guess so. Because boy, they haven't shown it since then. And the week after, they just ran the ball a ton against the Raiders. So we're like, okay, that's just Belichick game planning. All right, fine. Then they had COVID, and that Chiefs game was just a giant anomaly. And then the following week, okay, fine, they had one day of practice. What's the excuse this week? I mean, the Niners are good, but they're not world beaters.
Well, my excuse is that, well, the Niners, though, are really good when they're good. Yeah. But that, another strange team that, you know, they killed the Giants and Jets. Okay, those teams suck, but those road games with no, you know, down a lot of players killed them. Then they get beat by the Eagles at home. Eagles are pretty bad. And then the Giants should have beat the Eagles. They're up 21-10 with 4 minutes left.
Yeah.
And then the Dolphins just kill them in their own building. And you're like, wow, the Niners kind of suck.
Yeah.
Go into New England and just annihilate them. Now we're like, oh, the Patriots kind of suck. But my excuse for the Patriots would be that Cam signed late. He doesn't know the system that well. There was no real full training camp. So him getting COVID. So remember, the team had to miss, but he missed even more because that Hoyer game, Cam was already like missing practice and already, you know, quarantined.
Right.
So he's missed even more practice. And so he's the one who needed it the most because he's still, as the quarterback, picking up the offense and doing all that kind of stuff. So he just looked crappy, though. His arm looked like Eli Manning throwing in the ground, like missing open guys. And he just didn't look sharp.
Yeah. And let's face it, though. They also – their receivers are terrible. I mean,
oh, don't tell Ted Bell that. He's going to say they're so talented. Their receivers are terrible. They are the worst receiving corps in the NFL. Julian Edelman's 34 and playing hurt. N'Keal Harry, I think he got hurt also, is just terrible. He never makes a play. And then Damir Byrd and Jacoby Myers. Who are these guys?
Right, right. N'Keal Harry went in the concussion protocol early in that game. It might have helped a little bit. They have the receivers have one touchdown and 8 interceptions when they're targeted. Think about that.
Yeah, they're terrible. And then James White missed a couple of weeks. And then, you know, they're trotting out Burkhead and James White and N'Keal Harry. It's just such a low octane offense. It's so low octane. There's just no playmakers on that team. And Cam can – I mean, their defense would have to be the 2000 Ravens and let Cam just sort of caretake, make plays with his legs, and then Edelman catch a 7-yard pass, and then Harry box people out because he's pretty big. It's just that, you know, maybe Damon Harris looked all right. He showed a spark that 1 week, and Beasthead is useful in a utility role. I mean, they're all okay, but, yeah. If Cam – unless Cam's playing really well – the offense isn't going to go anywhere.
Yeah, the tight ends they drafted, none of them have made an impact at all. And granted, rookie tight ends rarely make an impact, but the opportunity is there. And it's just when Ryan Izzo is your leading tight end with 12 catches and 90 yards, you know, it's ugly. It's ugly all around. So, yeah, I don't know, man. Looking at them, they're going to, you know, I've written out my matchups so I won't get spoiled on guest lines. I'm going to do it before the Monday night game this week just so I can watch the Scott Van Pelt Sports Center not be spoiled on the lines. But the Pats are going to be – they're going to be underdogs against Buffalo this week. I'm pretty sure of that.
Where's the game?
Buffalo.
I looked. They'll be getting 6 maybe, but Buffalo looks like crap too.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. Yeah.
I don't know. I just made that up. Maybe 5. I'm going to think about it, but maybe 4. Who knows? But Buffalo – got killed by Tennessee, showed they were outclassed. They got killed by the Chiefs, got totally outclassed. They were 4-0. It was oh, maybe Buffalo's in the same class as the Chiefs and the Titans. It was oh, no, they're not.
Right.
And then they got killed by the Chiefs, but they got soundly beaten.
They got outgained 2-1.
Yeah.
They got killed by them.
They got killed. And then the Jets were toe-to-toe with them basically the whole game. I mean, they pulled away.
Like, well, toe-to-toe, they had four offensive yards. They didn't
they
go.
Did. But a touchdown, a two-point conversion on the last
That's one big-ass toe. Yeah. I think the Bills are off right now. And I know they're missing John Brown. They're not getting much out of the running game, but they had 8 field goal attempts. That's not going to hold. You got to be able to finish.
Yeah, especially against the Jets.
Yeah, who they blew out the first time, too. I did get some pushback last week saying, hey, you need to downgrade Josh Allen after how he looked the last couple weeks. It's like, well, you know what? They're facing the Jets, so not so fast. Now I'm going to have to. I don't know how low I'm going to have to push him.
Season long. I have him below Justin Herbert. I have him. I mean, he's still good. He's still going to get the rushing floor, and he at least has established that he's a real passer now. He's not like just a running quarterback who occasionally throws. He's graduated into he can throw when he needs to.
Okay.
And maybe John Brown is better than we think. Cole Beasley had a big game because they kind of like took away Diggs a little bit. But maybe having that third guy who's really good and connected with the quarterback is kind of important to them.
They also had a tight end COVID outbreak. They had one healthy tight end, Tyler Croft. Dawson Knox and like two other active tight ends were all, Knox was positive, and then the other, like two other, like other guys were scratched because they were in close contact with them. The only reason Tyler Croft wasn't was because he was on paternity, like he and his wife was having a baby, so he was with her on the day that he got diagnosed or whatever. So I guess that might take away some of your options, your blocking options, takes away some of the running lanes, maybe. I don't know. But still, it's not what you expect. They won, and that's about all you can say. They did not cover. The Jets covered. Rufus lives. We'll see about that.
Saints didn't cover, though. I had the Saints. Oh. I had the Jets and the Saints. The Saints, they were lucky to win. I mean, Joey Sly, 65-yard attempt. Falls a couple yards short. I was rooting for it even just because it would have been cool, though I did have the Saints as my survivor pick. But the Saints, I still kind of think the Saints are good, but they just allow more points than a good team, a good defense should. And, the Panthers are okay. But you were talking about on the show that Lattimore got beat pretty easily, and usually he doesn't. And, Teddy Bridgewater looked good to me. That was a takeaway I had from that game. I watched a lot of that game.
He pulls it down and scrambles a little too much for my liking, and he's not fast enough to be able to do that. But that's also probably a function of the offensive line, maybe not giving him enough time. But he feels like, to me, he can't make the play and then throw. He can't buy the time and then throw. Where if he pulls it down, he's going. That's the way I see it.
Well, he made some great throws under pressure on the run.
Did he? Okay. I haven't rewatched that game.
9.1 YPA, 2 touchdowns, no picks, and made some tough throws and under duress. And there was duress. Like he was getting rushed a decent amount, and they took away the run game entirely, so he had no.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have the cushion of that. He was just throwing the ball and kept them close. He looked pretty good to me. I mean, kind of good like in the Mayfield way where he can make some plays and move around, but he's not a good enough athlete to really scare you, And then if you're not an athlete, if you're like Mayfield or Bridgewater, they're not like statues, but they're not athletic. If you're like those guys, you better be like Tom Brady good in the pocket or Drew Brees good, because you're giving away a huge advantage in the modern NFL.
That's true. That's true. Speaking of Drew Brees, he take away his top two receivers, still moves the ball pretty well, I thought, all things considered. It was annoying that Kamara got a touchdown pulled away from him. Other people just jumped in. But it was Callaway, it was Harris, it was Jared Cook getting a touchdown. They got by, and they're 4-2 still. Game behind the Bucks, and they beat the Bucks. The Bucks are still the class of the division, plus 80 in their scoring so far this year. They look really tough.
Well, what they did to Green Bay was pretty big. That was a big win. And then going into Oakland on the road, which Oakland just beat the Chiefs in Kansas City, before the bye. That's flexing some muscle. And also, their loss was to the Saints,
mm-hmm.
and that was early. They almost lost to the Chargers, and we're like, oh, the Bucks are a fraud. But then we realized, oh, Justin Herbert is legit. So it doesn't look quite as bad. And they look good. And Brady's now, you know, they're going to get Antonio Brown. Brady's got so many weapons. He looks good. Fournette and Ronald Jones both look good, but I wish it were just Ronald Jones. And it's they're one of the favorites, man. It's like them. In the NFC, they're probably the favorite. In the AFC, Chiefs and Titans and Ravens, those three teams probably still the...
Not the Steelers?
I put them fourth, even though they're the only undefeated team left in the NFL. The Titans were better. Ben, in that second half when the Titans made their run, could not convert any drives. That's why the Titans came back. They kept having to punt or they had turnover. And, you know, Juju's getting all these targets, and even Deontay Johnson, who got two touchdowns and all these targets. But it was all dink and dunk. There was one 28-yard play to Juju, but most of the ADOT is, like, right around the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
So it wasn't – I don't know if the Titans did that on purpose, if Vrabel set it up so that they had to do that. But they stifled them in the second half. And the Steelers could have put that game away if they had just scored more or got some first downs, but they couldn't do it. So I don't think the Steelers defense is really good, but offense is more important. So
I'd agree with that.
I'll put them fourth.
They should have targeted Claypool more. And then my ranking on Claypool wouldn't have been so bad.
They should have done that, Jeff. Maybe they'll learn their lesson for having almost lost.
Yeah, that'll teach them. Because my ranking is way more important than their result. That's for sure.
They care about that.
They do. They clearly do. I'll talk to Tim Benz, my Thursday radio guy from Pittsburgh, about that. But we'll see what we can get in place. I'm looking at the standings right now. The NFC East, every team in the division has a negative 30-plus differential. Every team in the NFC West is plus 31 or better. Just interesting. And some of that's against each other, too. The Eagles... they still make mistakes. I mean, the Giants were right in that game Thursday night until the very end.
Right in it. They were up 21-10. They weren't in the game. They had it won.
I know. Evan Engram holds on to the ball. It's all over.
Don't get me started on Evan Engram. How bad of a football player Evan
Engram. What a drop. I mean, what a horrible drop.
Just a drop on the interception. And I saw the next day one, so I'm not sure exactly what happened. But it tipped off of Engram, the interception. There was another interception earlier in the year where Engram didn't like break back for the ball that hard.
No.
He's always hurt. He's always like, he's not a good blocker.
But he's the play I'm talking about is the third down play in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, of course. They get a first down. They run out the clock.
It's over. Game's entirely over.
I know. He just dropped it on the sideline.
Ah, brutal.
He's terrible. I've told people that for the last several. I'm like, this guy just, you know.
I saw two leagues where he got spite dropped. I don't know. They must have had him on their bench because usually you can't drop a guy that's already played. But right. I saw him get dropped in two leagues, like on Friday. It was like, right. I've had enough. I'm out.
Yeah, he sucks. He's just not a good football player. You know, it's just you can have all the athleticism in the world. I'm learning this. Like I just assume all these guys are really good at football and then you'd have this like advantage by size and speed. Like, you know, if you were big and fast and powerful – it'd be like DK Metcalf. They're like, oh, he's not agile in the combine, so we're going to let him fall to the end of the second round. And I'm like, no, if this guy can just like run a route and catch a pass, he's just too much of a beast for any of the defenders to handle it. But I'm kind of finding out that's the exception, right? That DK Metcalf, even though he's not like laterally agile, at least according to the combine metrics, probably is a really good football player. Like he just knows what he's doing. Whereas the Evan Ingrams of the world that have sort of the Metcalf-esque freak size speed combo aren't good football players. Then you have so many receivers these days. Instead, you know, it used to be Terrell Owens, Randy Moss, you know, Calvin Johnson, Julio Jones, Andre Johnson, these just total specimens were the class of the league. But nowadays it's like DeAndre Hopkins, Michael Thomas, Devontae Adams, Keenan Allen.
Yeah.
These guys are like technicians, route runners. And they're not really fast. They don't make a lot of huge plays down the field. Hopkins made one last night, but it's rare. They're not like so physical. I mean, Devontae Adams is pretty stout. He's like 6'1", 215, but he's not like, you know, he's not a monster like Metcalf. But these guys they have football skill. They don't have that like
right.
freak athleticism, but they have football skill. And, you know, I want obviously both if I can. Someone who can break open a game like Odell Beckham. The problem with Odell Beckham is he's like a sports car. He's too fragile. He just can't. In the last few years, it's just he couldn't, you know, first few years he was great. But I want a guy who can break the game open, Tyreek Hill, you know, someone like that, peak Antonio Brown. But But the truth is, like, these sort of football technician guys have taken over as the style of preference among the, you know, top 15 or 20 receivers in the league.
Isn't that why Moss and Owens were unicorns, though? I mean, because they had it all. They had the size, the speed, and the talent.
Andre Johnson.
Yeah.
Calvin Johnson, Andre Johnson. You know, there were a bunch of them. Those are the guys who took over, you know, like those were who was the number one receiver every year? It was Calvin Johnson or Andre Johnson for like 5 years.
Right.
And then Beckham came in the league after that and he was in Antonio Brown. So you had this small, they changed up the rules of what DBs could do. And now like the guy who was small and quick and could change directions on a dime, but also take it to the house, was unstoppable because you couldn't knock him off his route. I mean, they were calling much more stuff. You couldn't grab and clutch as much. But now it's not even those guys. I mean, there are some of those guys still. Like Stephon Diggs is kind of one of those guys, and there's still good players like that. But, you know, Tyler Lockett, Tyreek Hill. But the prototype number one receiver now is this dude who's like 6'2", 210, and runs a 4.55. One runs a 4.5 at best, but has incredible hands. Knows, you know, it's on the same page as his QB and knows how to run a route. And they're not like that efficient on a per play basis, but they just make all the catches. Michael Thomas, you know, Hopkins.
Yeah.
Keenan Allen, Devontae Adams. Robert Woods is like the poor man's version of that. You know, he's sort of like that.
Right. To your point about Hopkins, I saw him, you know, he got wide open on a play and got tracked down by a linebacker.
Yeah. No, he's slow. He's not. He ran like a 4.5 something. And he's, you know, that was at the combine 6-7 years ago. I mean, he's not fast.
Right. Not definitely not as fast as some of those out there. That's for sure. Not wide receiver fast. That's for sure.
Not, you know, DK Metcalf is fast. Terry McLaurin is fast. Those are AJ Brown is only like a 4.49. Although the combine's not everything. AJ Brown is so thick that when he catches one of those slants, it looks like a tight end. And then you're like, okay, he caught a slant, he's going to get tackled. Then all of a sudden he starts running away from the defense. And you're like, oh, they're not going to catch him on this play.
Oh, yeah, that play against the Steelers yesterday. Whew. Man, he took one step and you're like, oh, he's gone. He's gone.
But he looks slow because he looks like a tight end because he's so thick. I mean, he's like 230.
But they weren't gaining. They were not gaining at all on him. That's for sure.
Well, how about Danny Dimes outrunning those DBs and just tripped?
Yeah, he just couldn't outrun the 15-yard line.
It was a 20-yard line that he tripped on.
Yeah.
20s, you know, there was a little tripwire there. But Danny Dimes, his speed was the 15th highest speed of any ball carrier in the NFL this year.
I know.
Faster than Tyreek Hill's fastest.
I know. It's crazy. And you know, the weird part about that play was how wide open it was.
He just did a bootleg and he was gone.
Yeah, it was like, what happened here? I mean, did everyone bought the fake? It was crazy.
There was one guy who's probably supposed to be there just in case and didn't do his job.
Yeah. And you could see him just looking around and all that. Yeah. I don't know. I was impressed with the Packers yesterday. I was impressed with playing without Jones, playing without one of their starting offensive linemen. They just came in and just throttled him right away. And you know, both sides of the ball. Now Bradley Roby got hurt early for Houston, and I think that was a pretty big deal. But it doesn't explain Houston's problems on offense. I was really disappointed there because they had been rolling the last couple of weeks.
There's no coherence to the offense. It's Deshaun Watson running around and slinging it to a bunch of different guys, all of whom were okay, none of whom were great.
Yep. You know,
Will Fuller kind of shows up, goes away. Cooks is good and quick. Cobb is a nice nifty slot type of guy, but there's nobody that you're like, oh, we got to stop this guy. And then David Johnson's just a guy at this point. Duke Johnson may get more work eventually, but who knows? There's no, you know, cohesion. It just seems like they're a little bit like the Cardinals. Like it's just this herky jerky, sort of slinging around. There's no like rhythm to the offense where they're just kind of driving down the field, moving the chains like a good Chiefs drive, you know, set up by Andy Reid.
Because the runs always suck. Every time they run the ball in the middle of the pile, it just doesn't do anything, and they do it way too often.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the running game is important because you can't have your passer get killed.
Right,
and you need the defense to honor it. Maybe you do it a third of the time or whatever, at least, you know, third to a half, and passing is a half to two thirds probably. You know, that's a pretty wide range, but that's the range, right? And But since you do have to run it a decent amount, the success rate of those runs is important. Like,
yeah,
to get a success rate that's high, so it's second and five, second and four, and you're smashing into them, and your offensive line's attacking the defensive line and wearing them down, I think that's a big difference from second and eight. I mean, just think of the, you know, we know this from baseball, right? If it counts 1-2 or 0-2, batters in a hole, the OPS in those counts is way worse than when it's 2-1, 3-1, 2-0. It's way better. And I'm sure it's the same thing when it's 2nd-9, you know, 3rd-11. It's terrible, right? The YPA and the success rate. Whereas if it's 3rd-2 or 2nd-5, you know, the whole playbook's open. And I think it's probably the same thing. And so we might look at, like, I don't know how they measure when they say, oh, the running back. Well, there's two things. Running backs don't matter, which is individual backs. And then the second claim would be running game doesn't matter. In other words, running play success. And I mean, running play success has to matter.
I agree.
Regardless if you think, you know, what you think about individual backs. Right. I also think the individual back matters, but the running game includes the offensive line and all of that.
Right. Yeah. And you don't have to establish the run to establish the pass. You don't have to do that. Just some semblance of balance is what we're looking for here. It makes play action all that much more effective. If you throw the ball on first down every time, they're not going to buy the play action. Why? You don't bother doing it. It doesn't hold the linebackers. But if you have some credibility with the running game, just a little bit, it'll help.
I'll give you a good, you know, there's a thing called Wittgenstein's rule, or Wittgenstein. Ludwig Wittgenstein was a philosopher. And he said that if you have a ruler that's measuring something, the thing that you're measuring is also measuring the ruler.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have a ruler that's a foot long, and they're not going to take this to any place that it shouldn't go, and you're measuring something, you know, that should, you know, not be that big, I'm really not trying to take this anywhere. You'll be like, wait, this is the wrong measurement. The ruler's broken. Like the gradations of this ruler are wrong. So the thing measures the ruler also. So if you have a model that says the, you know, never run, it doesn't make sense, or the running game is totally stupid, and then you have 6-time Super Bowl winner, not including the Giants Super Bowls, Bill Belichick, running the ball some games like 70% of the time, some games 10-20% of the time, but, you know, often running a lot and drafting running backs, you might want to check the ruler.
Yep.
You know, you might want to say, I'm not saying that Belichick, the argument from authority, that no matter what he does is right, but if you're just some dude building a model on Excel, or so even, you know, in a more complex model in a programming language, and it says this thing that the smartest people who actually have the most skin in the game are doing, do not agree with it at all. None of them, not one. Maybe you're some super genius that's figured out something that, you know, it's possible, right? But we don't want to, again, just have the argument from authority, but it may be that your model's missing some real life, not data, but experience.
Right.
Where these guys, it's like, oh, you're telling me you should, you know, they run, you should run 10% of the time or 20%, or that, you know, running backs don't matter. And yet everybody else, you know, Dobbins gets drafted, Sony Michel gets drafted. I'm not saying those two guys are good picks. You can pick bad picks from any, and we don't know about Dobbins yet. But it's sort of like the best in the game are doing this. You know, Andy Reid takes CEH. Belichick takes Sony Michel. Harbaugh takes Dobbins.
It's not like Adam Gase is out there doing these making these decisions, right?
It's not like Adam Gase is the only guy taking running backs. And so, of course, look, you know, it's you have to come up with something that explains why they wouldn't understand it when they're looking for every possible edge, when the Ravens are very advanced in their analytics and doing things that are sort of cutting edge.
Right.
So the whole thing is just so, I don't know why I'm banging this drum so much on this podcast, but I keep thinking about it, and it's just like, it's so stupid, like the line of reasoning. But right. It's a good thing that the concept of Wittgenstein's ruler, where it's like, if what you're measuring, you're like, oh, my calculations say this and they must be right, doesn't comport. The thing is also measuring you. The data is also measuring the model. The model's not just measuring the data. If you come up with a theory that says, you know, Ronald Acuna should go in the fourth round next year, maybe you want to rethink your model. You know, maybe the result is also measuring the model.
It's like the system that said that Ryan Tannehill was the most valuable player in that Pats Titans game.
Yes.
You know, that's right. You better check. Yeah. you're not, your model somehow seems to be broken, you know, it just,
right.
But anyways,
and it's just a good thing to keep in mind.
Yeah. It's funny. You mentioned the Pats and then, you know, Belichick, we were talking about all the problems New England's having. Contrast that with Tampa Bay, you know, we don't necessarily want to say, okay,
it was
Brady, not Belichick. It might be. It looks pretty good. And now they're adding Antonio Brown, which I don't know how that's going to work, but it's just one more talented player. It makes it a nightmare for fantasy, but it's pretty darn good if you're a Bucs fan.
Yeah, it's cool. I actually have a bet with Dalton. I bet on the Bucs versus the Patriots. And when Cam got signed, I was like, ah, damn it. Like, I bet when Stidham was going to be the quarterback.
Right, right.
Dalton was foolish enough to bet on Jared Stidham Patriots over the Bucs. So I said, okay, I'll take that bet. And then he was talking Yang about it in addition, which is just horrible. But then they signed Cam, and I was like, oh, I'm going to get screwed because they're, you know, the win total just went up one or something when they got Cam. And then after the Seattle game, I was like, uh-oh, Cam looks like he's completely healthy and great. I'm going to get screwed on this. And the Bucs had lost to the Saints, looked pretty bad. Brady didn't look that good. But now I'm feeling – I mean, don't ever count your chickens when you're going against Belichick, who makes the adjustments. But still, the Bucs look like almost a shoe-in to be better than the Pats.
Right. All right. Is this the end of the Pats' reign in the AFC East? Does Buffalo take it this year? They got a two-game lead, and they're playing each other this week.
Well, don't sleep on another team in that division.
Miami, Tua.
Yeah.
Making his debut this week. I'm excited about that.
Not that good. Buffalo is like a 9-win team, I think. You know, their defense hasn't looked good. I know Tre'Davious White was out for a bit, but Buffalo has a negative point differential right now. You know that? They're -4.
That's crazy.
So the Dolphins are +47, and a lot of that 47 came in San Francisco.
That's true.
So, I mean, the Dolphins right now are probably the better team, you know, or at least, you know, close to it. We'll see what Tua brings. Maybe really good right away. And then never sleep on the Pats, right? Because they're going to play twice.
Right.
So that's, you know, they're right there. That can even it up. We just know what team is definitely not going to win. We just know that there's one team not going to win.
Yeah. -118 so far for the Jets. That's crazy. We'll finish out with another news item. Kenyon Drake has been diagnosed with torn ligaments in his ankle. He'll miss at least a few weeks. They're on bye this upcoming week, but it is totally Chase Edmonds' season. And Edmonds is the better-looking back, though, too. I mean, it's just, you know, Drake had another hideous drop in the passing game. He's just slower. It takes a while. Edmonds just goes. You can tell. It's a big difference.
So, remember in draft season, like, people had Drake, you know, end of first, early second. And it was like, well, I mean, look how good he was in the second half last year. And it looks a little like the Amos Zeroway, or even worse, Kevin Barlow syndrome,
right,
where you're really fresh. He wasn't used much in Miami. He goes fresh in the second half. It's a small sample. He has 4 touchdowns in one game against a weak opponent. Overall stats look great. And then, now you're the feature back the whole year, starting week one. And
then he got himself hurt in training camp too. And I don't think he was ever really 100%, but that doesn't, it's done now. I mean, yeah, it's tough, you know, and we're almost like, you know, in the last week, you know, he had the big run against the Cowboys late and they gave up on the play. It's like, hey, no one really thought he's fixed, but they're like, well, okay, that cements that he's going to get the job for a while. And he did, really. He was the guy. That now this happens, and you could just see the difference. It was night and day. Edmonds was the better back, but yeah, we'll see what happens now with Edmonds. If he's Amos Zeroway, or if he's actually like Arian Foster stepping in.
Right. I mean, sometimes they are. Sometimes Edmonds has always kind of been good as like a fill-in.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a whole different thing. Kevin Barlow was great as a fill-in to Garrison Hurst, and then I think it was Garrison Hurst. I could be wrong on who that was. But anyway, then he gets the start, and that was the end of that.
It was. What are you working on for East Coast offense this week?
I don't know. I was going to write about all the misery in detail, but I kind of did that already in my observations. Because the reason I didn't want to do it, but I just couldn't write about the games without getting it off my chest. I felt so like just disgusted with the. I just didn't want to think about football, but it's my job, so I have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to like bring myself into a state of mind to do it. So I just had to like dump it. So that was going to be East Coast offense, and now I'm not exactly sure. I don't know. I'll make up something. I was thinking about just the idea of this, which is that, you know how things are nonlinear, right? Like, you know, if you're like, well, things like not everything just is like incremental linear. So that like, if you're going against like an average defense, and then you go against like a 60th percentile defense, like, okay, it might be a little harder, but a 70th percentile might be like an earthquake where that's like
right.
twice as hard. And then the 80th percentile is twice as hard as that. And the 90th percentile is five times harder than that. And if you go against like the top defense in the history of the league, it's like 100 times worse than the tougher than the 60th. You know, I don't know exactly. And so we have all these metrics where we kind of just, you know, we just kind of were like, all right, well, tougher defense, they allow X per play, or just think of it this way, which this might be too complex for me to express, but you need 10 yards for a first down, right? So if a defense allows like on average, like 4.8 yards per play, which is elite versus like 6 yards per play, which is bad. The amount of times when that's your average play that you get a first down, at a certain point, it's not just like a little bit less. It's like, no, that average makes it so that like the chances of driving down the field go from like 70% or 80% to get a touchdown or field goal to like 20%, because you just can't string together enough first downs with like a certain per play to get to the 10 yards. I'm not, and it's probably not linear. It's not just like it goes down. It might like drop significantly when you get below a certain average.
Right.
Suddenly it's like almost impossible to string together three first downs. Right. And that's, you know, what you need to get to a field goal on average starting position. So just little things like that, that I feel like we just kind of look at everything sort of, our presumption is like, you know, better is better, worse is worse, rather than it's exponentially better, exponentially worse. And it may skew a lot of our understanding about matchups and things. I don't know. It's probably too much of just an idea. That was something I'm thinking. I don't know. I'm going to make something up.
All right. Online. I look forward to it regardless. So it should be good. We got the value meter tomorrow. We got free agents from Kevin Payne. We've got the free agent podcast tomorrow with Jake Letarski, Joe Bartle. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Chris and I will be back at you next Monday. Take care.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.